Yo, what's good? Check it out. This your boy, Elder Sensei, one half of the legendary Artifacts. You are right now in tune to my man, Tim Einenkel, at the library on rapstation.com. Let's get it popping, y'all. Artifacts.
That's it, folks. I'd like to leave you with a little thought and say this to you, that I feel terribly, terribly, deeply sorry for people who do not drink, because when you get up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel for the rest of the day.
I got a few dollars in my pocket, but not enough if I want a bottle. My rocket, what the you mean? Got friends that depend on fucking lean, cause the world acts just too fucking mean. What you want, what you want, what you fucking need? This damn place is a base for a bunch of greed. I got bread for the butter, hair for the lover, but I gotta bring it to you so I get a shout.
What do we know about my next guest? He's an MC, producer, and frontman of hip hop crew Mayday. Names of his solo albums are A Sorry for Skeptics, A War Within, Sunny Winter, and Sunny Winter 2. He's recognized, and I want to welcome him to the library with Tim Einenkel on rapstation.com.
What up, what up?
Well, thank you so much for joining me. So, you know, I want to talk and focus on you as an artist, but I also want to talk about your discography. As I mentioned to you prior to taping, I really like your album, The War Within. So I'd love to ask you a few questions about that. In the intro for The War Within, the track says, quote, "This session will be for exploring your deepest and darkest fears." It seems when you explore your deepest and darkest fears, that's also a great way to create art. So how much of that rings true for you in your rhymes and in your album concepts?
Man, it's definitely a huge percentage of what I do. I've always felt over the years that the most enjoyment I got from making music was when I was doing things that were, you know, personal or sensitive to me, and the response that I would get from releasing music over the years, I always got the best responses from things that were, you know, very transparent and genuine and just, you know, about what I know about, which is, you know, life, you know, my life, which relates to me. And, you know, the toughest thing as an artist that I've learned is that, you know, there's an audience for everybody. There's an audience for every style of music. It's just like the tricky part is finding that audience. And, the best way to find that audience, the quickest, is just be yourself. And, you know, it sounds kind of cliche, but it's just like, you know, do what you know, and I feel like the people that will relate to you the most will come out of the woodwork, you know, as you do that. So I've always tried to make it my music as personal as possible because it just feels right.
When did you, as an artist, when did you realize that, and this kind of goes into a question I have later about Sunny Winter 2, where a journalist writes that all throughout, Wreck is human and relatable and demonstrates, again, how he is one of the most unique and stand-apart voices in hip-hop. So pretty much, when did you realize in your career that being human was the way you want to go versus, you know, being an artist that rapped about fantasy stuff?
I think it was always kind of in me since the beginning. But when I first started rapping, I was really like very heavily like political, and I had a lot of angst, you know, in my like younger years. And it was cool, but it just wasn't really like gratifying in the way that I expected it to be. And as I like gained some years, I got into my first indie deal in Miami, signed to a label called South Beat Records. And they were, you know, they were a startup label. They didn't really like have any experience. And I ended up getting shelved for a while Mayday at the time, which was just a two-man group, was putting out their album. There was an R&B artist putting out an album. There was a Latin pop artist putting out an album. So during that time when I was shelved, I was basically very frustrated with not being able to release any music. And I started doing a mixtape series called The Waiting Room. And it was like basically just to A, you know, keep a little bit of buzz and like keep some music out there on myself. And then B, just to like express the frustration that I was going through with sitting on this label and not being able to release any music. And that was like, it was A, therapy for me. And then B, it was entertaining for people that were listening. And I got a really good response from it. So from there is when I started to really focus on trying to just display what I was going through and have it be relatable to people. So from there, once I started that series, I think that's when I started to really tap into it.
Is there ever blowback for an artist when, all right, so for example, right, with my job, if I was to like go on Facebook and talk shit about them, right,
yeah,
I would most likely, and my boss would say that there's a good chance I'm gonna get fired, right? But with artists, they're allowed to do that, right? You're allowed to talk about your frustrations about a label shelving you. Is there ever blowback, or are you ever worried that there's blowback? That there will be blowback to that.
I think it has to be done with a certain level of tact. And at the time I had two problems going on at the time. I had a management problem because my management was frustrated with the label. So they kind of stepped away from the situation and in turn stepped away from me as well. So I was very bitter about the fact that my management had abandoned me. And then the label, which I was having problems with, but I was very upset with my management, so I was really firing on them. And the label, I was complaining and I was showing my frustration, but I was doing it in a strategic way that I wasn't really talking shit about them per se. I was saying like, hey man, I understand what's going on. I'm like just letting y'all know I'm ready, and I'm like I'm here and I'm doing the music, and like I'm sure we'll find that middle ground. And there's moments on those mixtapes where I'm saying like, hey, I know it's rough, and like I was being sympathetic to the label in a sense. So I feel like it was an interesting take on it, because a lot of times it's just the artist firing on a label, and sometimes it's unjust that the artist complains about the label, because a lot of times it's not the label's fault, you know? So I was trying to be strategic with that one. You always have to do it with a little bit of tact, because it can come off either just whiny, or sometimes people just go over the edge and it's just too much, you know? So it definitely has to be done with taste.
One thing I really appreciate that you are so truthful in your rhymes, and you do it in a very artistic way, but you're, and at the same time, I feel like this is, it's a way therapeutic for you, in a sense. So I kind of want to go back to a few tracks on The War Within. In the record, Can't Be Alone, it is a rock, it's a rock song, right? But in the last 40 seconds, you spit lyrics. So at first, I thought the song was addressing the subjects or your need to be in a social setting at all time. But then at the rhyme at the end, I thought maybe you're addressing the fact that you couldn't be alone without hip hop culture and hip hop music. So what is the song addressing to?
It really started as like a strange feeling of wanting to have space, but at the same time being so dependent on being surrounded by people all the time now with social media. So I started to realize that like sometimes you want to have your own little space, but then at the same time we're like all online all the time sharing everything, and then all of a sudden now we're like alone, but at the same time not never really alone at all. So it was kind of like a way for me to talk about that weird like dichotomy of like it's such a contradiction, you know, you want your space, but you really don't want your space at the same time, because you're letting everyone in and sharing everything you do constantly throughout the day. So in the last couple projects that we've done, both with Mayday and solo for myself, like the social media concepts I've really been interested in and just like to explore, because it's so like, it's so current, you know, with what we're all going through. So that was really the main focus of Can't Be Alone.
In the intro track again of The War Within, the doctor refers to you as Mr. Miller, right? And
yes.
Benjamin Miller is your government name. So
correct.
So I want to talk about your public versus your private persona, I guess. Here, what is the difference between recognize the artist and Benjamin Miller the person?
There's actually not a huge difference. I would consider that to be a huge difference. I mean, I always used to joke around that like I came up in the battle circuit in Miami, and as a battle MC, one of my biggest tools was that I when I came into a battle, it was very tough to like pick me apart, because they didn't really have a lot to go on. I just come in, I was very like unassuming. I just come in looking like your average everyday dude, and then like was able to come in and get ferocious on the mic, and that would catch people off guard. And then when I switched into fully focusing on being an artist, I felt like that was a hindrance, because you don't want to be the average everyday person as an artist. You want to like shine, you want to jump off the page, you know? And, I feel like for the last like 10 years that I've been doing recordings, that has been like a struggle for me to turn, to basically highlight the aspects of my personality and make them pop off the page a little bit without feeling so like forced or feeling so like I'm going to get dressed up and, you know, tap dance across the stage. So it's been like a struggle for me to figure out how basically to amplify certain aspects of my personality to make the music, you know, appealing to people and without going too far. So I wouldn't really say that there's a huge difference. And I feel like that's when people meet me on the road and people that I work with, whenever I get feedback on stuff that I've done, I always feel like that becomes a real positive aspect of what I do, is that there's not really a huge difference.
I want to turn to Sunny Winter too in a moment, but also this kind of feeds into you talk about your personal versus private. And I want to ask this question in a way that I'm not trying to ask for like a gossip type answer, like a TMZ. I'm not asking as if I'm like TMZ and trying to get you a gotcha moment, I guess. So I'm just curious, like what is your relationship in alcohol and with alcohol in terms of your art? And I only ask this because your Twitter profile, you have a quote Jack Daniels infused, and then there's a few times, you know, on the track you're talking about alcohol on some of your records, but you're not glorifying alcohol, like saying, you know, look at me, blah blah blah. So I'm just curious, what purpose does alcohol serve in your artistic message?
That's a great question. My background, I was born in London, so I'm British at heart, right? My mom is my mom's whole family is British, so as you would know, the Brits love alcohol. We love to drink, you know. Yes. We're not quite the Irish, but we're pretty close, you know. So I've always been a drinker. I've always enjoyed drinking, and I wouldn't say that I've ever had an alcoholism problem really per se, but drinking has always been there for me as an adult. So it's like something I enjoy to do. It's like a social thing for me. It's definitely, it's probably one of the vices that I enjoy, you know, the most really of anything. I don't really get down too much on anything else these days, but, and it's weird because, when we go on the road and we do shows, I meet people that have serious problems with alcohol, and my conscience weighs on me sometimes, because it's fun to do songs like On That Jack and talk about drinking and being that guy who's like always on that jack and all that. All right, cool. But then when I meet people that really have problems, I find it hard to just be that guy. I want to talk about, hey, look, there's also a way, there's also like people slide down the slope, you know, and moderation is something that I feel is key. And also in the last year or two, I've had like some problems with my health that is not directly related to alcohol, but I've had to pull back on intake of alcohol. So I also feel like hypocritical just being like, hey, I love to drink, but also you should know that, hey, you know, sometimes you can really go down the wrong path and it's a dangerous thing if you don't treat it with respect. And then on top of that, like, I've also had to pull back a little bit, you know, to get my health right. So it's like something that I always want to be transparent about, because I'd hate to be like, I just feel hypocritical, you know, if I don't show both sides of the coin. So, but yeah, it's something that I do enjoy, and it's part of my character, and I try not to hide it. But at the same time, I don't want to be like, you know, we have a lot of kids who listen to our music, and it's like, I don't want to just be like, hey, like, you know, smash the alcohol. You know, I just want to be responsible with it as well, because it's, you know, I don't want to lead anyone down the wrong path, like based off something they saw me do.
Is it something that, I mean, is it like having a glass of something, does it help you with an ideal writing situation, or does your writing situation kind of depends on, you know?
I don't find it really as a, like a lot of people that I know that smoke, they love to smoke and write, and they love to smoke like for creative sessions. I don't really find drinking that helps me like that. It's just something that I like to do. And there'll be like, you know, if we work 5 nights in the studio, there'll be, you know, 2 nights we drink and 3 nights we don't, or in some weeks it'll be the opposite. It's really just a mood thing for me. I don't think like, okay, I'm about to have a session tonight, let's go get that bottle. You know, it's definitely not, I don't rely upon it like that. But yeah, I do say if there was any place that I do like to rely on it sometimes, it's the show. Mm. I do like to have a shot or two before the show. And when I'm out at the shows or kind of was floating around the venues, that's the time where I'll want to drink more than ever. But in the studio, not so much.
I want to get to a couple of tracks in Sunny Winter 2. And I'm always curious about the voicemail at the end of Vibin'. what's that about?
So this is the first project that I've ever completed with a Sharp Sound, who's a producer from Miami. But we've known each other for over 10 years. We've worked together a bunch of times over the years, and we've just been good friends. And but we've never really been able to like complete a project. And it's really Sharp Sound's mainly a DJ. He's an incredible DJ. He DJs all around Miami on the regular, but he's always dabbled in production, but he's never, you know, taken it on as a full-time focus. So this is like a project that I wanted to complete with him for the simple fact of completing one after all these years. Over all the years that we've worked together, and every time he's ever sent me beats, we always joke around that he's been one of the producers that will send you like a 10 second snippet of a beat and you're like, well, okay, so that was dope, but what do I do with this? You know, like, or I'm an engineer as well. So I'll take it and I'll loop it and I'll fix it up. But I think to myself like, oh, if I was like an MC that didn't have any technical prowess at all, or didn't like know how to fix this, what would I do if you send me a 10 to 30 second snippet of the beat? You know, what am I supposed to do with this? So that was a real message that I had sent him. He sent me the beat, I think it was for Hydroplane, and it was like 20 seconds or 30 seconds long, you know, and I had to tease him about it. And then you know, I even said it in the message, like, keep this because I want this to go on the project. I want people to hear that you're giving me 30 second beats, you know.
Can you, if someone, when that happens, are you able to write from those? Like, you got 20 seconds of a beat. Are you able to start your writing process, or do you really need more than 20 seconds?
I mean, yeah, it's like you can write to it, but it just kills the vibe a little bit when it's having to like restart and reset every 20, 30 seconds. So like I'll take it into Pro Tools and I'll chop it up and loop it myself so that it runs smoothly and doesn't stop. So most of the time I'll take it and start working on it and get it into Pro Tools and, you know, fix it up so I don't have to deal with a 20 second silence, you know, every 25 seconds. So yeah, it's something that I'll jump on and fix. But yeah, it's like I'm on the road and I get it and I load it up and I don't have my rig with me, you know, then it can be a little bit frustrating where you're like, man, every time I get into the vibe, I'm like, I have to reset the beat, you know. It can be a little annoying.
On a track like Vertigo, which you talk about the kind of the drama of relationships, are you writing as the drama's unfolding, or is it something that it's like after the fact that kind of helps you make sense of what you just went through?
Now with relationship stuff these days, it's drawing upon past experiences because I'm in an extremely positive relationship at the moment, and I have been for a long time. And a lot of my like most traumatic relationships were years ago. So I draw upon those past experiences because I have been through a few traumatic ones that were so traumatic that even years later I can still like rewind right back to that moment. Mm. And then if I don't feel that it's something I can draw upon for myself, I take from people that I have close to me, or just, you know, observing upon people that are in traumatic relationships that I see, because that stuff is so loud, you can kind of catch the vibe from it, even if it's, you know, on the boat next to you, so to speak. So I like to do it from stuff that I've been through in the past, but sometimes it's better to just observe as an outsider and report like that.
Do they know you're writing about them?
I've had both. I've been able to pull off like people not knowing at all that I drew from them. And then I've had a few where in the past where I've written and they've heard it and gone like, hey, so that song, like, what was that all about? You know, cause they feel it there. They sound like the story sounds familiar, you know?
Right. You know, you're obviously not just a solo artist. You're also a member of the group, Mayday. And I wanted to know if there's ever been like a conflict of interest for you, not like a dramatic conflict of interest, but in terms of your writing, like, has there ever been a moment where you're writing a verse for the group and then you realize, oh crap, this is would actually be a good, you know, a good solo track, or vice versa?
I've written a few songs for myself that got put on the table and everyone went, wow, we would love to put that on the Mayday album. And we've done that a few times. Rem on Take Me to Your Leader was one of those. Dig It Out was one that I finished and thought like, oh, it could be dope for a solo project, but ended up as well on Take Me to Your Leader. So that's happened a few times. When we're writing Mayday songs, I don't ever really think of that though. I don't ever think of like, oh, this verse would have been great on a solo project, because I'm so into what we're doing for Mayday. But it has happened the other way around for sure. I've definitely written songs that I thought were going to be for a project of mine, and then we end up putting them into a Mayday project, because at the end of the day, really, Mayday is my top priority, and I'm like a lay down for the, you know, sacrifice anything for the crew. So yeah, if a song that I've written sounds like it would be better as a Mayday song, or would help a Mayday album, then that's always that would always be the case.
What for you guys? When you guys collaborate, are you guys always in studio together, or in the age of, you know, the internet, is it just like emailing you a beat or, you know, whatnot?
No, most of the time, always in the studio. At least for me and Burns. Burns and I go to the studio like we treat it like a 9-to-5 job. So we just go in every day of the week. And I'll take the weekend off, but we'll go Monday through Friday every day. And then sometimes the beats and stuff will come from the wire, because over the years, our production crew has kind of spread thin, and, you know, Plex took a step back, and then, Gianni has taken a little bit of a break as well. So it's just like beats will come in. If they do make beats will come in through the wire. And then, if not, it's just me and Burns, trying to, you know, put stuff together in studio. But, yeah, I'd say 99% of the time it's in the same room.
So I know you, I read that you used to do graffiti, and I know you've kind of stopped doing that, but, are these your being an MC and also are you, I guess, a former graph writer? Do these two art forms kind of influence each other have you been able to ever take like what you've done for graph writing and kind of use that kind of discipline maybe in your writing?
I mean, yeah, I started it around the same time that I started. I was already into music, but I started into the craft, and I quit because I didn't really consider myself to be that good. But I liked the energy of it, and I loved like putting pieces down in a book, and to me, like graffiti still influences my art all the time, because I pulled my name off of a train. So. Like I got recognized off the subway art book that Martha Cooper did. And, so it's just an always influence, but, I feel like it's influenced a lot of people. And I know that, there's a lot of people that were, you know, graphic artists, like Aesop Rock, I know went to school for, graphic art and then, you know, ends up as an MC. So I feel like that parallel happens a lot. And whether or not people speak about it or not, it's definitely, yeah, I do feel it influences the music. And, you know, whether it's seeing a piece, seeing a mural somewhere, or watching a documentary on an artist or something like that, I feel like that definitely always will help influence the music.
So what's next for you? I mean, what's next in terms of Mayday, but also for solo work as recognized?
We got a few things. Well, we're about to hit the road next week. So we're going to be on the road with Tech N9ne, Chris Calico, Stevie Stone, Cess Crew, and Ritz. We're doing the Independent Powerhouse Tour. It's the variety show of Strange, where they take almost the whole label out. And we're doing 58 shows in 60 days. So that's next. We're on the road heavy for 2 months. And, I'm finishing up an EP right now that's going to come out on Strange in the summer called Pressure Point. I don't think I've told anyone the name yet, so you'd be the first to know. Mm-hmm. It's called Pressure Point. And, it's going to be about 6 or 7 songs, and it's going to come out, I want to say in May at the moment is the date I have. And then we have, we've been working on Burns' solo project. Burns has a full length solo album, coming out on Strange in July. So we've been wrapping that up. And then this will be the first year we don't do a Mayday album since we've signed to Strange. Just kind of felt that it was going to be a good time for us to take a little break and not put an album out. And then our last album, I was a little like disappointed in the, not the feedback, but in the traction we got for that album. So it felt like a good time to take a break, give the people a little bit more time between albums, and give our crew a little moment to just like recuperate. And then we'll do another Mayday album next year. And then I'm supposed to be on the books for a full length solo, which would be a follow up for War Within in 2017 as well. So hopefully, if the timing lays itself correctly, all those things will release when they're supposed to.
Strange Music Artist, a member of Mayday, an amazing, incredible MC and producer, recognized. Thank you so much for joining me in the library with Tim Einekell on rapstation.com.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it. And my universe is breached, so I'll just keep it moving, even though you're asking me to jump back into feelings. You're like a yo-yo, bouncing off a mountaintop, in and out of flux, and so abrupt, I really doubt you'll stop. I was jumping the line and acting like it's fine, but it's your turn to go. Time, Lord, it gives me vertigo. I'll just jump in the line and acting like it's fine, but it's your turn to go. See, you've been spinning my mind and thinning my time, Lord, it gives me vertigo. Vertigo. Okay, the phone just rang. Super nice to hear from you. Been about a week, but kinda felt just like a year or two. I've thought about us. I thought that it was over, but I hear your tone of voice and I can see you don't want closure. You wanna stay a while and talk about us reconnecting. Talk about electing.